Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Love Your Music. I'm your host, Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer-songwriter, and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am happy and excited to have Diana Toma back as my guest today. Join us for a conversation about how she is living her music as an artist, teacher, a student of life, and how to unblock your creativity. Welcome, Diana.
Hi, Margot. It's so exciting to be back on the show. This is my third time to be invited, and I think it's been 3 years since we last had an interview.
Actually, I think it's 5 years because I think it was in 2015. Can you believe it? I mean, time
goes so fast.
And yeah, and I've been wanting to have you back on the show for a long time, and it seems like, you know, I keep thinking, well, I'll do it soon, and then it just hadn't happened. But yeah, I've been watching your posts for so long, and I just really appreciate how positive you always are and all of the beautiful art that you share and how generous you are with teaching about art. It just, you know, you're one of my favorite people on Facebook, and I just love seeing your posts. It always makes me feel better. So thank you.
Thank you. I've been using social media to really connect with the community and create a community around what's important to me, which is self-expression and connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, connection. Oh, my gosh, that's so important. I remember hearing after my meditation not too long ago what was the five C's: connection, communication, creation, collaboration, and celebration, all five of those. And you do all five of those.
Oh, wow, I love that. Yes, the five C's.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, they're all important. And I think, especially right now, everyone's starting to realize how important it is to have connection with people and communication with people. So, yeah, they're really, really, really important things. We have some really great questions that you're fans and friends have asked to have answered on this show, and I think that we probably need to get started with those. So the first one is from Maria Angela?
Marilena,
I'm sorry.
I think.
Yeah, anyway, it's a beautiful name in writing. Unfortunately, I don't know how to pronounce it, but she says, Diana, you're cursed and blessed to be Romanian. What kind of inner what kind of inner and outer universes has this simple, unchangeable fact both opened and obscured to you as an artist? What a question.
I know. I'm just gonna start by saying a little about how we came up with these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Julius loves to ask me what questions do I want to be asked, and I said, why don't we do something different this time and actually ask my audience to ask the questions? So I posted on my Facebook page, and I got a variety of questions, and they are all so interesting and so deep and very challenging for me to answer because they really go deep. So I can tell that this question, if I wouldn't have known who asked this question, I could tell that it's asked by someone from Romania, just of the way she worded things. And the thing she's really pointing to is that her and I were both born and raised for a period of time in a country that was under communism for about 40 years. I was for 42 years, and mostly of a dictatorship type of communism. And I was 15 when the whole regime, when the revolution started, actually in the very city where I was born and raised, city of Timișoara. So my parents, you know, lived most of their lives under that circumstances. So this is what she's pointing to when she says, you know, cursed and blessed, because I got to live a bit of each world. And what I've come to realize hindsight looking is how adaptable people are. Because I have a lot of wonderful memories in the way that, because we were so disconnected from the outside world, and you know, we didn't really have any kind of information from outside the country, what we really focused on, especially my family, was really reading a lot. And my parents had this giant library of books, and my childhood is just so, I just remember reading so many books and playing outside with friends, and my experience is going to my grandparents' house. On my mother's side, I had my grandfather was a priest, and his house was attached to the church. And I have these really wonderful memories of him letting me go when they were pulling this bell to call people to church. He would let me be with a man who was pulling this really heavy rope. Even today, as a grown-up, when I hear the sounds of the church bells, it just creates this just wonderful feeling of well-being and joy in me. And then on my father's side, I just had my grandmother living in the countryside, so every summer I would go and play with and milk goats and play with the pigs and the ducks and the chickens and get our food from her garden. She didn't even have running water. It was a well. So I just got to experience certain, my upbringing was, now looking back, full of charm. And my children here in this wonderful developed country of America do not have that experience. So those are some of the blessings that you take from the cursing of being put in the situation of to growing up in such sort of system that the country where I was born was going through those times.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that, though, that it's both blessings and curses, because, you know, I mean, really everything can be both, and a lot of it is how you look at it too, and what you choose to focus on. And it sounds like you're choosing to focus mostly on the blessings of it, as at least as far as looking back on it. And it sounds like, actually, to tell you the truth, it sounds a lot like where I grew up, because it was up in a rural place in Shasta County on the way up to Lassen Park. So we had moved up there from Menlo Park, Palo Alto area, when I was 5, and I grew up with horses and cows, and we had some chickens, and we had cats, and we had, you know, just gardens. I loved planting flowers in my part of the garden, but, you know, yeah, I grew up in a lot of those same ways, and I'm so thankful, because it also made me read a lot. I loved reading, and I loved music, and my grandmother had wanted me to be an artist, and she was an artist. And so I used to go down and stay with her down in Los Gatos, and she would try and teach me how to paint. I loved squishing the paints around and making the colors. I wasn't so good at making pictures, so I didn't really have the patience. I just love it, though, when I see the art that people like yourself create. It just blows me away. It's just so amazing.
That was my favorite activity as a kid, was just like really draw. That was, you know, wherever I would go, I was just, I was not, I would not paint, but I always had a pen and paper or pencil or something like this, and that was like when I would never get bored because that was my activity that would sustain my interest in any situation.
I totally get it.
That is not to also, you know, yeah, maybe as we grow old, I choose which memories to select because it's so important for me to have a joyful experience of life, but I don't want it to make it sound idyllic either, because I also remember going to stores and having empty shelves and long lines just to have a bottle of milk, and there's a lot of other sides to it that, you know, they weren't glorious at all, you know.
Oh, I know. I know what you mean. It's like I've done the same thing with my life. I like to think of the fact that we can edit our life, you know, in other words, we can choose what we're going to focus on and learn from the things that were not good, and also have those things help us appreciate when things aren't that way, which leads me into our next question from Tony. And she says, in what ways has your art been impacted by COVID-19, both positive and negative? And that kind of is the perfect question to answer because, number one, we're all thinking about that and dealing with this weird reality that we're in right now and how do we handle it. Yeah. And the other thing is that it's like, you know, how you're handling it versus how you could be handling it. So in what ways has your art been impacted by it?
This is a very important question, very current right now. And yesterday, one of my newest collectors stopped by to pick up a commission he hired me to do for him. And he said something. We ended up talking for a whole hour. It was a wonderful conversation. But he said something very interesting. He said, I know these COVID times are so difficult for so many people, but for me, this has been my favorite year of all years, because it really, this slowdown forced me to really see what's truly important in my life and also ask the question, why is that important? And I really agree with that as my personal experience. So at the beginning, it seemed like a welcome slowdown. I got to have more time in my studio. And then we didn't know how long this would take. We thought at the beginning would be just maybe a month or something like that. And as things started to change and all the galleries I was in, all of the shows, all the competitions, all my classes I was teaching, everything closed.
Right.
And I have to completely restructure the way I would run a business, because this is where I would make my income from.
Mm-hmm.
But even beyond that, having this absence of connecting with the community, because this is so big in my life, really creating a community around art,
mm-hmm.
and meeting with people, teaching classes, taking on art projects, always doing something around that in a community setting, which disappeared, had me realize how important to me is to of contribution and how significant that is to my own experience of life. So what I've started doing in the whole month of April, because I wanted to still, my question was, how can I help my community? How can I, with what I do, my art, my classes, painting in general, how can I be of contribution to my community to make this slightly a little bit less stressful or distressing. So I was having conversation with my friend, and I said, okay, I'm going to do a series of free painting demonstrations every other day for the entire month of April. So I started doing those. I would do watercolor paintings and in some days, and acrylic in another, and oils in other, and going live on Facebook video at the predetermined time. So I will be held accountable to keep showing up. And at first I thought, wow, this is a lot of work for me. Why do I even want to do this? But something was calling me to. And I was, as I was going through this sharing of and offering this, like, you could do this. You could paint. You can take a portion of your day to focus on your own creative self and the joy of painting. Because that's the style that I teach you, like how to fall in love with painting. Mm-hmm. I've started getting this phenomenal feedback from my community, and people starting watching and then donating money for watching those. And then people, I think I sold all the paintings that I did as demonstration, which was like so surprising for me of how, by me just giving, whatever other problems there were in my life got solved out of that. That was not the goal for me, but out of giving came back to me. And I've realized the importance of connecting with the community and how big that is, and how even one person who's just an artist, just someone who loves to paint, can make a big contribution to a community like that.
You know, I have been realizing more and more this year, especially, that how important art is in not just my life, but in all of our lives, and how it's really part of everything that we do. And that's part of why the title of my book even is The Art of Living a Life You Love, because it's about creating and recreating a life that you enjoy and that you love, and focusing on love. And having to refocus on it over and over again, you know, when things go crazy and you have to make lemonade out of the lemons or whatever, you know. So
yes, I couldn't agree more, because there's two, I think, different pillars of this whole art thing. One is you become self-expressed through whatever, if it's music or fine art, painting or acting or what other, any form of art, you become self-expressed with the practice of it. And then the other pillar is now like it's a universal language that you can connect with anyone from any part of the world. It's like a common language through art that you get to create these connections with people. Without, like, it could be from different cultures, from different environments, from different upbringings, this wonderful common language that we can connect through.
You know, I love that. I love what you just said, because, you know, you're so totally right. Whether it's paintings or whether it's music, I mean, a lot of times there's songs that are sung partly in Spanish or another language, and I just love them, and I don't even know what they're saying, but I feel a connection to it. So, and I have to say that one of the things I absolutely love in our world is the fact that there are so many different kinds of ways of looking at life, so many different people, and from so many different places and perspectives, because it makes life so much more interesting and creative and fun. You know, it'd be so boring if we were all alike.
You know, I got to travel with the International Watercolor Society to Pakistan this year, early, right before the whole corona February. And this is a country that, like most people, especially from the West, would not think of visiting. But because of the nature of being an artist, I think, with I just am so hungry for cultural experiences and so interested, like looking for inspiration everywhere I could find it to discover how other people are living and how just curiosity, the innate curiosity, I think is a characteristic of just being an artist to want to discover this, led me to want to go there. also one of the maybe poorest countries that does not have such a good reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I discovered is by going there is how, I mean, you were received with so much love and appreciation, and how good artists they are as well, really impressed
mm-hmm.
by the art. And we have more, what I've discovered is that we have more things in common than not. And
exactly, yeah.
And what I also notice is, though, like, through, you know, the poverty that you see, like, they took us different places. They hired this big bus for us to visit, and they wanted to take us to this mall that was, like, a really, like, a westernized mall with really nice
mm-hmm.
things. But on the way there, you get to really see all the poverty of people living in the street, like, so sometimes with houses that don't have a roof. And how happy, though, they were. Like, my experience was that you don't need all these. Like, it really brought me back realizing it's not about the money. It's not about the wealth that makes someone happy
mm-hmm.
just by noticing how they were. Also, they were so interested in serving, being of service, which was also very moving to me.
So
I never thought I would end up there, but it's true. Like, it art can connect, and there were people from all over the world getting together there, and they had this amazing festival that was mind-blowing with hundreds of interviews and televised, and they rolled the red carpet for, like, huge surfaces with flowers, walking on the flower garlands and throwing these petals over us. And it was just such an amazing and different experience, so warm and open. It really opened up my eyes even more about the preconceived ideas we have and how we self-limiting ourselves, you know, out of fear, like avoiding connection with people.
Yeah. You know, God, the time is going by so fast. I need to get back to asking you some of these questions, or we're not going to get to all. Well, I mean, we might not get to all of them anyway. But the next one is from Chris, and Chris says, "How did becoming a mother most influence your vision of the world around you, themes in your creative expression, and your art?"
I really love this question. When I first saw it, I thought it was the most intriguing one to answer back, because I have not intentionally thought of it like that until she asked, and then I realized, wow, this really has a big impact on me. It sort of changed me from being this, like, really not, when it's just about myself, I didn't feel the need to perform that much, but now that I was put in the position of being a parent, and I've been a single parent twice. I was married two times, and I have a daughter from each marriage. And I was a single parent, got married again, put again in the situation when my second breakup to be a single parent again, two different
mm-hmm.
times in my life, really had me want to role model whatever it is that I'm about. So I realized that words don't teach, life experience does. So if
mm-hmm.
I want my children to be happy, you know, and not affected by it, I felt a lot of guilt of not offering them this perfect environment of being raised by two parents and, you know, in a wonderful environment. So I said, how can I create that for them with just me as one parent? And I realized really quick that I have to be in order to teach it. If I want to have them to be happy, I have to be happy. And that's how they, if I want them to learn that they can do whatever they put their mind to, make a living out of what they love, then I have to make a living out of what I love. And it really changed wanted me to go from talking the talk to walking the walk. That was, I think, the biggest difference. I'm really amazed because now I wanted to be a good parent. I wanted to for them to be proud or of who I am. I wanted them to get value out of being raised by me. And mostly I just wanted them to not be traumatized and have a really good chance of living a balanced life. So that, and it's still, it's a constant. It's not like I arrived there yet. It's a constant quest of how can I be a role model in the true sense of the word, like really having that apply to me and how I live my life. So I think that was a really big shift by becoming a parent that I didn't even know.
I can totally relate to that because when our son was born, he's 30 now, but when he was born, I realized that I wanted to be the best mom, role model, and friend I could be for him, and that he was going to model what he saw me doing and heard me saying, not what I told him to do. And so you're right. I mean, I wanted to be as happy as I could be, as creative as I could be, and to show him that I was willing to try new things and things that were scary and move out of my comfort zone. I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
I'm still constantly, you know, there's everything. It's like that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's like she says in there, anytime you try something new, you're going to feel some fear. So unless you're willing to feel some fear and do it anyway, you're not going to do anything
exactly.
new. And yeah,
that's the definition of courage. It's not about the lack of fear, but experiencing it and not have that stop you.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so our next question is from Tony again. And she says, what have been the biggest risks you've taken in your art or in your life that impacted your art? And how did they work out?
Good question. I think probably a couple of the biggest risks I took in my personal life. Once was to move from Romania and come here and live in the United States. I followed my relationship. I was never really interested in ever leaving my country until I fell in love with an American, my second husband. And that was a really big risk of just leaving. I was a young mother, I had a four-year-old, and just I had a business that was really successful there in Romania, and graphic design, and just leaving all that really good thing going to just, you know, discover to move here over the oceans and leaving my family. And the only person I knew when I moved, living in New York City for the first 3.5-4 years, and then we moved to Atlanta. That was probably one of the biggest reasons. I didn't know we had a long distance relationship, but you know, I didn't know if this is gonna work out, and it did turn out not working out. So, but that ended up being one of the best things that happened to me, because hitting that sort of a bottom rock of, you know, having a second failed marriage, which I never thought would be my life experience. My parents are still together. It's just really not something I've ever imagined would be me. Out of that emotional pain, I was unable to do one more thing that I don't love. And this is how me taking my second biggest risk to answer Tony's question happened, is becoming a full-time artist and really giving up all other excuses that I had, that this, I cannot make this, you know, artist is not a real job, and all these disempowering conversations that I had were dropped out of me actually hitting rock bottom and not being able literally to do one more thing I don't love. So I said to myself, and it was like a whole event of circumstances. I got fired from a temp job I was doing as a graphic designer, and So I was fired from a job I didn't even want. And the same day, I got accepted to do a solo art show at the new gallery that was opening. And that's when I said, you know what, I am going to take this risk and just, at least if I fail, I want to fail at something I really care about. And I've decided to not take any more other side jobs and focus fully on, you know, making a career out of being an artist. And it was difficult for tough, especially for a couple of years, because I had no clue how to even start. But, you know, I went to school for fine arts. I have a master's degree in fine art. I ended up studying 8 years in school back in Romania. And
wow.
It was sort of, I bought into the myth of the starving artist and it never even actually giving a chance. You know, I self-taught myself graphic design skills and was doing corporate jobs, all while I was always having art shows and selling work. But for whatever reason, I thought, you know, artist is not a real job. I got to get a real job. And I just deceived myself with that for a number of years until this really, what it seemed like a tragedy then, my second divorce, which actually generated me reinventing and recreating myself and arriving at this place now where I'm really happy with what I do for a living and all the other things that came out of it as being creating a community and making a difference for people. And I have people writing me messages and letters. You were the most important person to me last year, and I'm still so moved. How me, this little person who thought has nothing to give, I can, through my talent, through what I'm passionate about, contribute like that. So,
well, you know, by doing what you love, you're getting that love is being released out into the whole world, and it just, you're creating more love in the world. And boy, we need it right now. We need all the love and art and beauty and music and fun and joy that we can we can get. You know, I mean, that's one of the best ways. Let's go on to the next question. This is from Diane, and this is an interesting question. It's a short one. What inspired your love of big art?
And what she means by big art, I think she talks about me working on larger pieces. I work on every surface, but I've been really interested in working on larger surfaces, especially because of, so when I paint something larger, I don't paint it out of small paintings. What I do is I take the same approach that I do on a 10 by 16 inches surface, and I bring that approach on a large surface, which means like I engage my whole body. Now, if I had to make a small stroke, now I do a giant stroke where it really involves me using my whole body. So I'm trying to bring the same experience on a larger scale. So that's such a different way to approach painting. It's so intriguing for me, and I think, like, since I'm a full-time artist and I have to make a living out of this, and people would say at the beginning, oh, it's so great that you do what you love, but you can get really bored after a while doing the same kind of thing. So I have to create this in order to maintain my own interest in doing this and not just the sense of repetitive type of work, because I don't want to fall out of painting. This is so yummy and delicious for me. It generates so much joy in my life. I'm putting myself in situation of being uncomfortable, but and discovering and pushing and see what else can I do. What else can I bring to my own interest in such a way that it will keep me entertained and interested and curious. So. Working on, I just finished this 10-foot mural in my new house. I bought this house that it's the intention of buying the house is to teach classes here and create a hub for people interested in self-expression and art. So I was looking for a house that has really wide open spaces and lots of natural light. So I had this 10-foot wall over my inspired by studies even bigger than that nature. I created this elephant swimming underwater on mural, and it's been such a challenge going up and down on a ladder, trying to make up scaffolding that would help me to do this, and placing something, also playing with space. An elephant is something where we perceive as something very heavy, to place it really high up, and just challenging the perception of space. And I really love playing with these ways of, you know, creating art. So I hope this answers the question.
I don't know. You are making me smile so much. The next, well, also you've got that big giraffe in the slideshow that you were doing too. That's another one of the big ones. And
yeah,
I love the animals that you paint, and then, you know, everything. It's just amazing. Okay, Debbie says, what's your favorite piece of art you have done and why? That's a tough one. You've done so much art. How would you pick one?
So, because I paint a lot, I paint maybe 200, 300 pieces every year. And again, I'm constantly looking for ways to, how can I generate an environment in which I'm not getting too attached of a certain piece or way, because that can become routine-like and disengage me with time. I'm trying to consciously stay away from wanting to keep generating these sorts of I want to learn to let go as fast as I can. So while maybe an answer would seem most appropriate to say, maybe this won this award, this national award or this international award, or maybe this piece that I sold for, you're close to five numbers, or what I honestly, the piece that it's my most favorite is the piece that I'm working on right now. Piece I'm currently working at, it's on the easel. That is my most favorite piece.
That's fantastic.
Intentionally bringing this way of being and looking at things and approaching my work. So my intention would be right now in the moment, and not have attachments to things that maybe cannot be replicated, that cannot be regenerated, and I will stay fresh and interesting.
Well, you know, also that way you're in spirit instead of in ego. You know, you're just letting it flow and seeing where you can grow, you know, and being in joy, you know, like you were saying. That's beautiful. I was really curious how you were going to answer that one, and I love that. Okay, the next question is from Terry. And Terry says, what do you credit for helping you to achieve your free and spirited nature?
Well, thank you for calling me free and spirited in nature. That's lovely. And I thought about this question earlier this morning, and you know what I think it really is actually the contrast that my life generated, going through so many tumultuous, emotionally heavy and suffering. It really made me, like, in the depths of that suffering, this desire got born that I do not want to suffer. I do not want to. I want joy. I want to, you know, what can I do? How can I live my life so I would not live in this way? And I think that really keep making the how can I be free in my mind, in my approach, in the way I think of things? How can I not take things so seriously? How can I be more lighthearted? What is really important? And keep questioning even my own stories, questioning my own ideas. Is that really so? Is that really that tragic? Is that really that? No. So I think this is part of why I'm really embracing this. But I'm that does not mean I don't have hard times. I maybe I intentionally leave a lot of them, and the constant practice of choosing joy, choosing lightheartedness, you know. And I'm not the master.
Oh, totally. Yeah, exactly. You know. God, I'm loving your answers to these questions, and the questions are wonderful, too. I'm so thankful that you asked your audience what they wanted to know, and they've got some amazing questions. I just love this. Okay, Jerry says, well, this is one of the ones I'm really looking forward to, too, because you know how much I love music. Jerry says, I know you paint with music playing. Do you find that you paint differently when listening to different music genres?
So Jerry is one of my students, one of the class participants. I teach painting classes for adults here in the Atlanta area, and also in whatever else I'm invited to teach. I've been teaching quite a bit in Florida. So she knows I play music in my classes, and it's because I want to create a sort of mood for the class, but actually in my real work in my studio, but in the work I do in my studio, I rarely play music. And this is, so what I've been going through, about 10 years ago, I had the biggest blockage, creative blockage I ever had. I didn't paint while I was married with my ex-husband. I didn't paint for about 5 years. And that was the longest period that so the reason is, and I saw it, like, my ex-husband was constantly challenging me, like, paint, why don't you paint? You got to paint. And I was coming to, my mindset then was one of, if I cannot create a masterpiece, I don't even want to try. Like, I felt as if I cannot create something really important, really meaningful, really, like what is silly to even try. And that really created a complete blockage of my self-expression. And he even said, I remember he said, stay there with me. He said, you going to art school and fine art school really screwed you up, because now you have these expectations of how you should create. And back then I did not agree. I was really upset that he told me that. But that was the truth. It was like me allowing these preconceived ideas of how important should my work be, really stopped me from even having the go at it. So one of the things that I, in this period when I was getting divorced, that really helped me was to, because I was so self-critical of myself, if I would start painting, I would. And it started even with the subject matter. Like, first was like, there's no, absolutely no subject matter that's important. Like, well, how could I even bring myself to figure out what I want to paint? Until I saw the artwork of this watercolor artist. His name is Dean Cruiser, and he's painting these animal portraits, and with such an exuberance. There were splashes and drips, and you could still see the portrait expressed very clearly, but all in this such a freeing manner. And then that is the sort of pivotal moment for me when I said, wow, there is genius in just the approach without even having, like, his work weren't, like, you know, creating some meaningful message in the way I thought the message should be meaningful, like change your ideas of the world. But it was meaningful in the way that it generated a freedom in me that I so wanted to take part of, that I started painting again. So in order to quiet my critic voice that was so loud in my head, I started listening to this audiobook. I'm really into, I was being into self-development and learning about things like that. So I would play a book, and so that my mind would be engaged with the book and not be criticizing what I'm doing as the work. And I really got into this way. I'm still doing it today, like 10 years later. I always listen to something. Now I love to listen to podcasts like yours. And I love the impact theory and the School of Brain, and there's a bunch of great podcasts out there where my attention stays focused on the very interesting conversations over there, usually powering conversations. And then I get to paint more from like intuitive self, more from my gut feeling, more from that space that's beyond the analytical mind. That I really think that it's a sort of genius is tapped into that je ne sais quoi, they say in French, in that space.
Yeah.
That it's not really about your mental abilities. It's like it's a mysterious space. Where you, if you tap into it, sometimes at the end of an artwork, I can't believe I did that. Like, I could not replicate it. It's really going in the zone and fully sort of quieting the mind rather than making it more exacerbated. Like, how can I create something really intelligent or important here? Quieting that.
Yeah, that would definitely block me or anyone, I think, if they're saying that. We really need to go on to the next question, though, because we've only got 14 minutes left. Anyway, Mary says, and this is kind of, you were starting to talk about this anyway. Mary was saying, do you feel in the zone once you've started a piece, or did something strike you before you've chosen the subject?
And I think it happens both ways. Sometimes you could feel inspired to, but more often than not, inspiration finds you at work. You first start working. It can happen that you feel inspired sometimes, but for me, and I think for reading about how other writers write their books and anything, you have to have a little bit of a discipline of showing up to your creative process, whatever that is, and not putting this high expectation that you have to be in the zone and inspired. You get there as you start doing it and you start pissing and sort of surrendering to it. So I think it's a bit of both, but I think more importantly to show up.
Yes, show up. Oh, boy, that's what my writing coach taught me when I was taking writing classes with her, and then she was doing writing coaching with me while I was writing my book. She would have me say, when was I going to show up, how much was I going to show up, and what days and what times was I going to show up during the week, and then I would have her to be accountable to. And I learned
practice.
Yeah, I learned to have it be, though, the goal not to be, oh, I'm going to show up for 3 hours this week. I'm just going to be 10 to 15 minutes every morning at the same time. And if I can do it longer, I'll do it longer. So my book was written in anywhere from 10 to 30 or 45-minute segments that ended up getting put together. But it's just the same type of thing. It's show up. You have to show up.
Yeah.
Okay, now Tony has another question here that I think is really an important one. Would you recommend formal training at university for young artists?
Yes, and the reason I'm not saying that you cannot arrive there in on a self-taught manner or maybe a different pathway, but. And this is very present in my life because I have an 18-year-old daughter who just graduated high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at colleges, and also what was really important, I wanted her to not start her young adulthood with student loans. So we really looked at ways to go to college without having to take a loan. And she successfully accomplished that. She has a full ride based on scholarships.
Oh,
but
that is awesome.
Yes, it's exciting. So she, out of this context of us like really not wanting to do that, she was looking at online school and says, Mom, you know, I think I can do online. And I thought, no, and because it's so, I think for me, like from my own experience, I realized it was so important to go to a place where I can physically meet with a group of people I would not normally meet in any other way that are up to the same sort of things. They are up to explore their creativity, or because she's following a fine arts program too, but just digital. And I saw that that kind of experience cannot be replaced. Even if the teachers are not that great or the school is not, I still feel like being there in that environment. I think that was one of my most interesting, happiest years when I in Romania, I go for 5 years instead of 4 here. So I think that experience is very important to have. And maybe if you are the son or daughter of maybe other artists or you in creative circles, maybe this experience could be replicated too and it's not need to go. But if that's not the case, I think, yes, I would recommend a young person to do go and do studies somewhere in person.
Yeah. Okay, so Claudia says, what advice would you give to your younger self just starting out in art school, and what would you do differently knowing what you know now?
Well, life is designed in such a way to give you the best experience for the most of your growth. So if you want to skip or you would want to do something different, probably all your experiences are still just as valuable. But if I could pick one, I would be maybe challenging my professors. Because back then I didn't have the courage to be so loud and self-expressed and demand to be taught and demand to be given the best of what they have to offer. And I encountered a lot of professors that were not very invested in teaching. And if I could do anything, I would be like challenge them and ask them and push them and have conversations, which back then I was trying to be as, you know, polite as possible. But inside of me and with our colleagues, we were having these conversations. Like, we're not learning anything from this, or, you know. So if anything, I would have been, you know, just had the courage to go and see what happens out of that, see what happens out of asking for what I feel I deserve to be given back then. Mm. And maybe they would have become more interesting professors out of that, you know.
Probably. All right, we're running out of time, but okay, so Rita says, what tips can you give a beginning watercolorist to keep them interested? Sometimes beginners quit too easily or get frustrated. I bet that's really true.
Yeah, so come take my classes.
I agree.
I think especially it's so important, especially watercolor, because it's so there's so much bias and preconceived ideas that watercolor is an unforgiving medium that, like, once you cannot remove, you can, and it requires so much dedicated skill to it. So that's just like one school of thought. But there's another school of thought, which one that I adhere to, that I think trying to control watercolor is like trying to train your cat. You won't be able to. You know, oils and acrylics is like training your dog. You can do it. Like, there's ways that you could, but not with watercolor. It has this ethereal look and this spontaneity, and you have to let it do what it does, and then you have to dance with it instead of trying to control it. Like, with your cat, you have to let her personality, like, you can, no matter if you want to, you cannot achieve that. So then you better be in a dance with it. So what I do with my classes is just let them take any kind of shortcuts they could take. If you're not a good drawer, use a projector, use a light board to trace. So you can have a good drawing to start with. So then you can experiment with painting. And, you know, a lot of conversation around this, I hear my students, they say, oh, that's cheating. You know, but what I notice is that even if you do use a projector or tracing device, that doesn't guarantee you have a good painting. which means
right.
he's not really cheating, because if that would be the case, then every painting would turn out good. So just use shortcuts at the beginning until you fall in love with the what you can achieve. So I think go find an instructor that can show you you can achieve fast results. And then that, once you're in love, then you will put in the time that you need maybe to study more drawing or study composition or, you know, because now you're in love. You do it. And when you're in love, you know how it feels. Like it's a joy to do it. You're interested.
Yeah.
So,
That's fantastic. You know, we've only got 4 minutes left. Can you believe it?
What's the question?
And I'd like to have you tell our listeners what you'd like them to leave them with, but I also think that the question from Marcy, which is the last one besides the two bonus ones, is where would you like your art to take you? And I think that would be really interesting to hear.
That's a great last question to take, I think. I want my art to take me places I've never been. And the reason I don't want to name them is because from my mind right now, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I can only talk from what I know that I know.
Mm-hmm.
So I want art to take me some places. You know, they say the studies say that our thoughts are repetitive in 85%. We just think the same thoughts every single day. It's so hard to even imagine or do something new.
Mm-hmm.
So places I've never been, and not just physical places. I love traveling, by the way, but.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional places, mental places, ways of being I haven't experienced, and all in the context of experiencing joy. So I think this is the best answer I can come up with this.
Sounds good to me. It sounds good to me. And, you know, I have to say that, too, speaking of the travel and going new places, I think it was around 3 years ago that you came to Sausalito and we got to spend time with
yes.
you and go to the art galleries and show
See,
you our houseboat.
That's number three years.
Yeah, I think it was probably about three
that's
years ago. But
in person.
Yeah, that was so much fun, and your daughter was with us, and oh my gosh, that was something that we'll always remember. And you know what? I still have your business card with your watercolor on it on the bookcase near the front door, and I see it all the time.
Wow.
It's right next to one of mine. It's right next to one of mine and a couple other.
You took us. You saw. I've never seen a boathouse. And you had the boathouse, and we went there to the marina and visited it. And I just still remember that experience. I really loved just getting to meet you, because we didn't know each other in person. We just met via social media. And it was just so fantastic to actually get to meet you and your husband and have a real in-person connection.
I know. That was wonderful. Well, we've got 2 minutes
and Michael,
left.
Before we go, I have a request.
Okay.
I want to give away an artwork, an original artwork, for one of the people who asked these questions, because they really are the one who helped us create this conversation here. So I want you to pick one person. Pick one person that would win this artwork giveaway.
You know, I think I'm just going to go with my gut, and that would be Toni, because she had some amazing questions. Everybody did, but she had some really powerful questions. So Toni's my choice.
Toni, it is. Congratulations. Thank you, Margo, for helping me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for being you. I just am so glad to know you in every way, social media, and have met you in real life and had you on my show. This is the third time. I'm so glad we decided to do 60 minutes, because we've only got 60 seconds left to say bye to everybody and remind everybody out there, live your music.
Yes, live your music. And I'm curious to listen to more of your interviews, because what you're doing there really makes a difference. So I want to acknowledge you for your contribution to a community of people interested in living empowered, beautiful lives. So thank you for what you're doing, Margo.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. You made me cry. Well, anyway, we have to go. We're going to get cut off. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Deanna, for your art and being you and all the inspiration and love and joy and creativity and kindness you exude. Bye for now, everyone. Remember to live your music.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.